to Meet the Prof.
Hey, I am Shane, and my friend Spence and I are interviewing Christian professors around the country who love Jesus and want to help students love and follow Jesus. This episode you're going to watch is actually a pilot episode. This is not the real thing. It has not been released to the public yet, but we're sending this to you to ask for your help. And we don't want you to worry about hurting our feelings. We want to hear the truth of what ideas, suggestions, corrections you would make so that this would be more effective. So the audience for our podcast is college students, and it's for people who love college students. And a large part of my motivation in doing this podcast comes from my senior year in college, when I had a professor say something to the class that I had never heard any professor share before. The professor said that he was a follower of Jesus. And that sent shockwaves through the classroom and through me, and really caused me to reconsider some of the assumptions I had made, like assumptions that Jesus doesn't really belong or fit in with academia, with the university world, or that Christians can't be intelligent. They're not the scientists. And it shook. It shook everything that I had believed that was false like that. And Spence and I, one of our hopes is that God will use these interviews to send similar shockwaves through that can cause students to reconsider Jesus, and for it to be a help to you to love and follow Jesus on your college campus. The interview you're about to watch or listen to is with Heather Holloman. Heather is an associate teaching professor at Penn State University. She has written 8 books. One of them is the best-selling Seated with Christ, another book called Sent. Heather and her husband, Ash, have 2 girls, and they have 3 cats, and she blogs regularly on heatherholloman.com. And I think you're going to love this interview. In this, Heather speaks from her own experience and personal stories about how to help people have warm connections with others, how to ask good questions in relationships, and how to help friends who are struggling mentally. So enjoy this interview, and please stick around afterwards to give us your thoughts and input on the form. And we appreciate you being a part of this early on. Thanks a lot. Well, Heather, I am so excited to get this time to interview you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and I'm really excited about this conversation.
Me too. So it seems like maybe the last time I saw you in person, we were at a conference together. I forget which one, because I've heard you speak at several conferences, maybe one in Raleigh.
Yes.
I've got something that you probably don't know, that how your husband, Ash, encouraged me. Years ago, he told me that he had picked up a hobby, and he took some time off every week to go and do woodworking. And that, like,
I love
gave
that.
Life to him. Because of him, I started taking time off every week to go out on the water here. We live close to the water, so I take my kayak out. And it has been life-giving to me. So I thank your husband for that. And do you have any hobbies like that? Do you have any hobbies that really
give
you life?
Well, I started a new hobby this year now that I'm an empty nester. I don't know if you'd call it a hobby, but I love going to Planet Fitness, and I've gotten into working out and strength training. And my students are such a support to me. I don't know why, but my students are so fit. Shane, they love the gym, and they're encouraging me, and they talk to me about, you know, lifting weights and all that. So I love that. And then I also love gardening. I love growing things from seed.
Oh, do you come back from your workouts and just go out in the garden?
Well, I wish
while you're all sweaty anyways.
It is like 9 degrees right now. Well, this is
no
a new
gardening.
Thing. I'll tell you in the spring. Good. If I do it. I just really started my fitness journey. So
great.
It is a hobby. It's something I really enjoy. It's
so
beautiful.
So I'm really curious about something, just to jump in. I loved your book, Sent. And
yes. You
have some awesome stories in there about you seeing God work in your neighborhood when, like, you would have neighbors over for just hot soup and bread. And then another time you share the story about having this exercise outreach for kids and be outside. And then in the winter you go in your basement for a couple years.
Yes.
Like, so I would love to hear first. Are you still in that same neighborhood? And then do you have
I'm still in that same neighborhood and I still connect with, yep. And I still connect with so many of those same families. I just was at the movies last night with a bunch of people from, well, one professor who became a Christian. She and I were at the movies last night. So we're still going strong.
I love that. And any updates about, well, here's what I'd really like to know. Why was that so powerful?
Well, it was so powerful for me because I learned the power of just talking to people as if they're already believers and not censoring any part of myself and being amazed at how much people want to talk about spiritual things. And even to this day, I'll say things like, you know, does it bother you that I talk so much about Jesus? Or, you know, even if I'm with someone, I'll be like, okay, here's the part where I'm about to talk about Jesus. How do you feel about this? And people just, they love it when you're honest and who you are. So that's what I learned most and most delighted me about that time. Also, the power of just community, daily being with people. It was so powerful, Shane. It heals loneliness. It just, there's nothing better than building a neighborhood. It takes time. It takes regular connections with people. And so now that all the kids are grown, it's more like me planning events for people to get together, like a dinner or, you know, taking people to the movies. Making sure I'm always planning kind of regular events and support groups for people.
Will you tell me more about this idea of talking to non-believers as if they're believers?
Oh, yes. Do you love that? See, do you do that, Shane?
Well, I could hear some college students might hear that and think, "What? How would I do that? Do I would go to my non-believing friends and talk of all these Jesus words and all. So what do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, don't be afraid of using church words or words that you think nobody understands. Because if they're friends with you and you have a warm connection, they'll ask you, like, what do you mean by that word? What is, you know, what do you mean by atonement? Or what do you mean by the gospel? You keep saying that. What does that word mean? So what I mean by that is you're never changing who you are when you're with people. You're just yourself. So if someone says, you know, Heather, how was your day? I'll say, oh, I'm having a good day. I really, you know, right now I just finished the book of Job and I read this really powerful Bible verse. Can I share it with you? And, you know, nobody ever says no when I talk about cool things I'm learning about God or
really.
I just bring people into whatever Jesus is doing in my life. And I'll even say things like, you know, I'm a Jesus follower. Even in professional settings, I have no problem telling people, you know, I come at this from a Christian perspective. And so, and it makes you have a lot more energy because you're not being fake. Do you find that, Shane, that like when you're with certain groups of people, you're like hiding parts of yourself?
It takes a lot of energy to filter myself. And
yes,
that's true. So college students love hearing what the professors were like when they were in college. Were a Christian even then? Were you walking with the Lord? What were you like as a college student?
Well, when I prayed to receive Christ when I was 12 years old, I just have to say I do think God gave me a supernatural gift of evangelism. I was someone that talked to people about Jesus all the time. I would give away, you know, I gave away Bibles if I thought someone was interested. Really? But when I got to college, a big part of my story is, you know, I didn't walk completely away from the Lord, but I pretty much got involved in the, you know, the party scene, the dating scene. In my book, Seated with Christ, I talk about how I just was fighting for a seat at the table. I thought I had to be thin and beautiful. I had to be rich and I had to, you know, make sure I was accomplishing a lot. So I really was exhausting myself, but I had a lot of energy. I loved having, you know, boyfriends and going to all the parties, but pretty soon I was like, wait, this is not the woman I want to be. So February of my freshman year, I rededicated my life to the Lord and there was a pretty dramatic change.
Wow.
But I was pretty nerdy. I'm such an academic. I was headed for grad school. So I was probably the person that was studying and writing really bad poetry and thinking of books I wanted to write. So yes, I was a nerdy professor even back then. Even back then, I loved vivid verbs.
Vivid verbs. That's been inspiring to me. Well, at what point did you know that you would want to be a professor? Was that really early too? When you started grad school, were you thinking about other directions to go?
Well, I wanted to be a professor because I loved analyzing literature and I even loved all the research components to it. But what surprised me when I got to University of Michigan is usually when you're a grad student in a PhD program, they'll allow you to teach those introductory classes. And that's when I fell in love with teaching and decided I really want to be a teaching professor. and not be publishing research in my field or anything. So that I knew I wanted to be a teaching professor the very first semester of my first year in grad school at Michigan, because I just fell in love with the students and the impact that a teacher can have and how powerful it was to tell people that you were a Christian, because it was so rare. So I saw people, I saw students come to faith. I saw a lot of people wanting to talk about Jesus that year. And I thought, okay, this is an incredibly impactful position in life to be a professor.
So I imagine some students who would say, I've never had a professor even say that they're a Christian. I can't even imagine a professor that would help other students come to know Jesus. How do you do that and not get fired?
Well, first of all, you're protected, you know, by the First Amendment, obviously. And with the new DEIB, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, people encourage you to bring your whole self to work. So the tide has turned. It's really not unusual to have people talk about their deeply held beliefs. And so I never feel uncomfortable like I'm going to be fired. And of course, when you're a professor, you're hired to teach your course material. So I don't ever use class time to talk about my faith. I never tie a student's faith to like their grade or anything like that. But usually what happens is on that first day of class or sometime in the semester, I'll let students know that my faith is the most important thing to me. And my relationship with Jesus is the most important thing in my life. And it comes up so naturally because I teach a professional development course. We talk about your personal mission statement and professional bio. The first time I ever shared my faith with a student, his name was Mike. This was back at Michigan. He just said, you know, how did you discover the purpose of your life? And I said, well, as a Christian, I really believe God has a purpose for everyone's life. And I really think he has a purpose for your life. And I gave him some books to read, and immediately he got involved in CREW at University of Michigan, and he prayed to receive Christ and started walking with the Lord just from that one office hours conversation. So that isn't ever inappropriate for someone to respond in an office hour setting. If you want to ask your professors, hey, tell me about your faith. I mean, they know I go to church. They know I'm a public speaker and that I write Christian books. So
what do you see students asking when they are open to talking to you about spiritual things?
Well, the biggest question I see recently as of 2023, you know, now we're in 2024, is they don't want to go back to the church they were raised in because of political, social reasons. So a lot of times students will say, no, I don't ever want to, you know, go to church again. I'm not going to go to church. And then sometimes I'll say to students, well, you can, you know, think about how to develop your relationship with God and find churches where you feel that you can fit in and that don't, you know, have that kind of posture in the pulpit. And, you know, sometimes I just pray, like, what is it? What do you say to students who are carrying so much hurt? And they'll tell you, you know, I was raised a Christian, but I'm an atheist now. And so I heard on a podcast, I don't know if it was John Mark Comer or who it was, Mark Sayers maybe said this, that this generation, this is what it's like in their heart. They say, I don't believe in God, but I miss him so much. In my own personal experience, students are angry at their church of their upbringing is what I see most of all.
You mentioned in your book, Sent, that there's a Harvard study that actually classified loneliness as an epidemic now.
Yes.
And how do you see this with your students?
Well, it's getting so much better now that we're, you know, coming out of COVID. But the loneliness is real. I mean, I had a, you know, fraternity president say, you know, I've been with the brothers 4 years and nobody's asked me anything about my life. Or students will say, yeah, I went home and my family didn't ask me one question about my life. Or I went on a date and the guy did not ask me anything. So it's a lot about the lack of good conversation and the lack of feeling connected to people. And so I do read all of that research about people reporting just high levels of loneliness, which they're linking to really poor health outcomes and really bad things. It's really bad for you to be lonely. It's like smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So I see that. And that's why I care a lot about the next book I wrote was called Six Conversations, just about helping people have better conversations, which actually lead to authentic gospel conversations. Because if you have a warm connection with someone, it's going to be so natural to talk about your faith. It won't feel like a sales pitch or a weird pivot in the conversation.
So I love the book, Six Conversations. I'd love to double click on that because with students who are finding it hard to engage, to know how to initiate conversations, just carry on a conversation. What practical advice can you give people for connecting verbally with others?
Well, my students asked me this last semester because I was giving them the whole outline. Like, here are the mindsets you need. Here are the six pathways. They were like, okay, let's work this out. So here's my best advice. If you're sitting next to someone in class, offer a compliment and then ask them to tell you the story about like how they got that thing. Like, I love that jacket. You know, tell me the story about how you got that jacket. Or, you know, just ask them to get into narrative. Like, I love that jewelry. Like, is there a story behind that necklace that you got? And you'd be amazed because a lot of students say to me, like, I offer a compliment or I say hello, and then I have no idea like what to say next. So, so you're always just thinking of being curious, getting people to tell stories, and then beginning to share your life with them. And it's easier than you think if you just offer a compliment and ask someone to tell you the story. You know, if it's raining, you could say, hey, are you someone who enjoys the rain? And see what they say. Just be curious and ask that initial question, and then you'll be amazed at how people will start to open up.
I love that. And that gets the focus off myself. I'm thinking about them and then asking for the story.
And if you really get lost and you're with someone who's like an introvert, don't forget the power of the how long question. So
what's that?
Like, if I have students that I know they're working out, the guy who's a fitness trainer, I'm like, so, you know, are you a fitness trainer? Yeah. Okay. What do I say next? I'll say, well, how long have you been a fitness trainer? How long? Don't remember, just don't forget the power of how long. Giving people conversation skills. I'm really seeing great results from students who I tell them, whatever you do, you want to form a warm connection with the recruiter, because it's going to be really hard to reject you if the hiring manager or recruiter feels a warm connection with you. And the research shows, you know, closeness enhancing behaviors, go ahead and ask a really good question, like connect with the person, ask a good question. Like, especially sometimes they'll say, do you have any questions for us? And one student said when they were sitting down, just in the banter, that, you know, this was a accounting firm that was really a competitive job. The student was able to say, what do you most enjoy about working here? Well, there was a panel of 9 students and she got the job because the guy said it was the only student who asked a good question. It's never manipulative. What you're doing is loving people well. And so if you're on a first date, and this is a true story, Shane, I saved someone's relationship. This was a Valentine's Day date. And things were not going well for this couple. So the student reached out to me and said, what do we do? We are just not connecting. I'm either going to break up with this guy or something's got to happen. I said, okay, when you sit down to dinner, this is what you say. I really want to connect with you. Could you just tell me, what question do you love people to ask you? Like, what are you secretly hoping I'll ask you about? And then let the partner, the dating partner, share, like, you know what? I actually do love talking about fantasy football and you never asked me about it. Well, then the girl was able to say, honestly, I don't know anything about fantasy football. Would you just teach me, like, why do you love it? You know, how does it work? Is there money involved? And then they ended up having the best date ever. They're still together to this day. They're probably engaged. I don't even know.
These seem like keys to people's hearts. Like, if I could get these questions down, just some simple wording in my head to ask questions, that this could really open some doors. And I like how you said that, for warm, how'd you say, warm connections?
It's a warm connection. And I recommend not asking people, how are you? The weak verb is very stressful for people. You'll never get a good answer. But on the college campus, I love saying, okay, I haven't seen you in a while. What have you been thinking about? Like, tell me what's on your mind. Or if you're with students, and you're a fellow student, just say, okay, what is the major stressor this week? What kind of week is it for you? People love unloading their stress. It's a way to carry each other's burden. So yeah, you'll never get lost starting or continuing a loving conversation again.
I always ask, how are you? It's such an easy question.
Don't do it. Say, has anything surprised you about your week? Has anything challenged you?
Stressful. What have you been thinking about recently? That's great.
Really? Or if I say, you know, what was on your mind today? Did you have any thoughts you couldn't get rid of? That is a really good, loving question. I got that from a trauma expert who said a lot of students that have anxiety, they need you to ask them, okay, what thought keeps going through your mind that you can't get rid of? And then they get to unburden themselves, and you can really be a blessing to people when you ask that question.
I'd love you to elaborate more on that, because anyone who loves college students like we do, that we're concerned about the mental health crisis and anxiety being at all historic levels. And what can someone who doesn't have a counseling degree, but what can a friend do to begin encouraging a friend on a helpful path?
Well, I'm going to give you an answer that is going to amaze you, because I got a certification in trauma-informed teaching this summer, and I learned something that changed my life about how to care for hurting people, whether or not they're depressed or have had trauma. Every person who is going through a trauma response or a hard time or just depression and anxiety, they need three things, and you can call them the three C's. They need certainty. They need to feel like they're in community, and they need to know what their contribution is. So certainty, community, contribution. Let me tell you what I mean. Your friend who is suffering, they feel out of control. Things feel very uncertain, and it's very scary. So a good friend is someone who is predictable. You present predictable routines to that person. You can say, you know what? What if we had lunch every Tuesday? Or I'm going to text you every Wednesday. That is a predictable routine that creates certainty. This is really good for someone who's grieving too. I run a grieving support group. I say, I'm going to check in with you every Tuesday. Shane, if I miss that Tuesday, it is like so distressing for people who are hurting. So certainty, community, people need to know that they are not alone. And so whatever you can do to form those warm connections with them and bring people who are hurting into community, and even tell them, you do not need to be okay to be my friend or to be in this community. You can be hurting. You can be having a bad day. We still want to have dinner with you. And verbalize to people why community matters, and set up experiences for people to be in community. Now, I know that's hard. If you're 18 listening, you're like, what does that mean? Well, invite people to dinner. You know, get everyone to go sledding, or get everyone to a game night. Be someone who begins to include people. And the third thing, contribution. Tell a hurting people what value they are adding to the world. Compliment them. Just be like, you know what? When I'm with you, I can tell you are so kind, and I love that you're such a clear thinker when I have problems. Or tell them, like, I love that you're studying microbiology. I really think you're going to contribute to the world of the, you know, solving the problem of this virus or whatever. So helping people know what their purpose and contribution is. So the three C's, you want to be certain, help people in community, and help them understand their contribution. And those are the greatest protective factors against the impact of trauma. The number one is community and social support. Just think, when you're with someone who's hurting, it is chaotic, unstable. They're very afraid. Your job is to create structures of certainty and support.
That's so practical. If students want to get to know you more or connect with you, how can they do that easiest?
I have a website, heatherholloman.com. You can also obviously follow me on Instagram. I'm not good at social media, but I will respond. If you DM me, I'm good at like responding to people. But I do send out kind of things I'm thinking about and things God's teaching me through his word, through my blog, which you can sign up for.
Well, Heather, it's such a joy to get to spend time with you. Anytime I get to talk with you, you've been an encouragement to me. You've spoken into my own life. You've sacrificed a lot to put helpful material out there in your books, your blog, and so appreciate you. So thankful that you are in these students' lives. And I look forward to getting more time with you next time.
Yeah, let's do it again.
Well, what a privilege and a joy that was to interview Heather Holloman. And there are takeaways that I'm sure you will need to write down from that. I think my number one takeaway from that time was this value of asking good questions, and her giving such practical questions. Normally, if I'm in a conversation, it's more natural to think about my own thoughts, myself. So what a great challenge Heather gave us to form good questions to engage in conversations. So I didn't mean this to be a segue, but I've got a question for you. Spence and I want to ask, would you please give us your input on this episode? We're still in the process of interviewing these professors. We have done 6 interviews now. We have more on the schedule. We're still editing them. And we treasure your input of what did you like? What would you change? Was it too long? Was it too short? Anything and everything. We created a Google form with some simple questions. Would you please look at that form and fill that out for us to give us your input? I sent you the link, probably when you got the link to this video or audio, the link to that Google form. But if you didn't receive the form, would you please text me and I will send you a copy of it. It's real quick to do. My cell phone number is 833-480-1815. I know that's a weird number, but if you'll please text me, then I'll send you a copy of the Google form if you didn't have it already.